welcome to 15 Minutes in DC. I'm Hayley Channer, Senior Policy Fellow with the Perth US Asia Center. I'm so lucky to be joined today by Misha Zielinski. Misha is a special correspondent with the Australian Financial Review, and up until a few months ago, he was covering Russia's invasion of Ukraine from Ukraine, including in Kiev and later Lviv. Misha's also a 2021 Fulbright Scholar, where he was based in Washington, D.C. with two think tanks, and he's the Assistant National Secretary of the Australian Workers Union and Secretary of the Australian Labor Party's National Policy Forum. Also, I wanted to tell people about Misha's hosting of foreign policy podcast Diplomates, a geopolitical chinwag, and he also has a Master of Public Administration from the London School of Economics. Misha, thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you, Hayley, and thank you for the very generous read. It makes me sound vaguely credible when you compress it all down in a few words, so thank you so much. Lovely to be here with you in DC. Mm.
So, Misha, my first question for you is obviously reflecting back on your time in Ukraine, what a sort of terrible and incredible experience that would have been for you. For people that are looking to pursue a career as a war correspondent and have absolutely no idea what to expect except for what they've seen on TV, can you just explain how did you end up becoming a war correspondent for the Australian Financial Review?
Well, I should probably start from the beginning saying that I'm not a trained journalist. I became a war correspondent in many ways by accident, in that I traveled to a war zone, having spoken to the editor of the Financial Review that I've been doing a bunch of writing for as part of my Fulbright, looking at the competitions between autocracies and democracies. And it's a matter of public record that I put my hand up for Labor pre-selection, was unsuccessful. Was watching the situation unfolding in Ukraine with some concern. And this was sort of, I suppose, in many ways, a front line of what I'd been talking about. And I can speak Russian, I had been writing for the Fin, got an interest and background in foreign policy. So I thought, well, I'll go to Ukraine. A lot of people probably thought I was having a nervous breakdown. and so when I got there, it was about a week before the war started. And so I started reporting from there. And of course, the war then broke out. And I found myself as the war correspondent for the Fin. How did I become a war correspondent? I was certainly asking myself that myself when missiles started to rain down on Kiev and all around Ukraine. But, it was an incredible experience, obviously deeply honoured to be able to tell the stories of Ukrainians and give their message to the world. And certainly, the way I was approaching, I wasn't there writing straight news per se. I was writing what you would call reportage. So looking at what I was seeing on the ground, but not so much about, well, Putin's moved his troops here, et cetera, more to say, okay, here's what people aren't seeing or hearing, and also providing, I suppose, foreign policy and defense national security analysis as part of that. So bringing those two things together. And fortunately, a lot of people were very good to me and got some very insightful stories out of it. And, it was the honor of my life.
So you almost came into it by accident because you've been, had connections with the Fin and were doing other related topics. Right. Did you actually approach them and say, I want to go to Ukraine, I want to see this?
Yeah, so the story was basically this simple. I had this wacky idea that I would go to Ukraine, and at a minimum I thought, well, look, I'll go and perhaps write some analysis pieces. And, I didn't have any sort of visions of myself as, Ernest Hemingway in the Civil War. Like, I was like, okay, how do I, make a contribution? I wanted to be there not as a war tourist. I wanted to make sure that I could make a serious contribution. And it was an issue that I cared deeply about. And so the idea that a democracy would be gobbled up by an autocracy is enormously concerning to me. And I think we'll talk about this, but there's global implications for that. And so well, how can I make that contribution? And I spoke to Stutch, who's the Michael Stutchbury, the editor of the Fin. I said, listen, if I go, will you take my writing? And he said, yes. And he said, if it heats up, we'll take a lot of your writing. And so he was, believed in me, I suppose. And I was fortunate enough to be able to make that connect. And so now I'm going to back myself, I suppose. And for me on a professional level, it worked out. But obviously, I would prefer there to have been no war and, maybe not as much reporting.
Yeah. Now, I followed your work in the Fin, but also on social media. And I saw some of what you were doing there. But I don't really have a good sense of what it was physically like on the ground there. And I'm sure people listening also wouldn't really understand what it's like to kind of come into a country just before war breaks out and then to see war break out and then to actually live in those conditions for weeks. So although this might be difficult to reflect on, what was it personally for you, you know, working in a war zone and being at risk all the time and also seeing the people around you experiencing war for the first time, many of them?
Yeah, so obviously it's surreal, right? There's probably no other real word for it. So you're dealing with enormous amount of risk. Previously to arriving in Kyiv, I'd never once heard an air raid siren, right? And that became kind of the soundtrack to my life in many ways. And so I suppose what sort of is the biggest thing that you realize is two things. One, you need to manage your risks clearly and, you know where the troops are, know where areas the Russians are attacking, try to avoid them. But of course, you know, you can't possibly avoid a missile strike if it's just so unfortunate as to be in the line of one. But also, you know, take proper precautions, you know, listen to the advice. Unfortunately, some journalists have lost their lives there. I think it's nearly 40 now, which is horrible. And, you know, so try to avoid sort of, you know, obvious risk if you can do that. But also the thing that strikes you about being in a war zone is that, you know, there's that initial period of shock. So when I got to Kyiv, you would not have known that there was a war coming, right? So whether or not you want to call it studied ignorance or willful blindness or hoping for the best, there was no sense that a war was coming when I was in Kyiv. I was meeting with friends, having lunch, bars are full, saying, what do you guys think about the war? You know, like it's like stepping into a twilight zone. You know, there's 200,000 Russian troops amassed on the north, you know, eastern, southern borders here. And they were like, there's not going to be a war. Don't worry about it. So it was that disconnect, of course, once the war started, there was a period of shock, then a period of anger, and then now we're into this period of sort of pushback and deep patriotism and stoicism. But what you find is life goes on. So, you know, places are being destroyed and it's awful. And, you know, the stories of refugees and the things that I was seeing breaks your heart, just absolutely breaks your heart, the tragedy and the awful, awful scenes. And, you know, the closer you get to war, the more pointless it is truly. It really does, you know, make no sense. And anyone tells you otherwise has never seen war, I would say. But you see people that are brave, people that step up in circumstances that I'm sure they didn't want to find themselves in. But yeah, I think people find a lot of courage. But also things are, you know, life has to go on. You gotta, you know, you gotta feed yourself, you gotta get up and, you know, live your life. And so there was very much, particularly in the western parts of the country, a focus on, well, we need to continue to keep things happening here. One, help move out the, you know, 12 million people that have been displaced by the war, you know, 1 in 4 Ukrainians. But also, you know, you needed the country to continue to produce things economically to be able to fund the effort in the, you know, the eastern parts. So an odd sense of normality. As I said, you know, the first missile siren that I heard, a missile strikes, you know, I didn't know my first name, you know, but by the end, you're kind of almost like, oh, another one, and you kind of just deal with it. People kind of calmly get on with it like they're dealing with anything else.
So, I mean, it strikes me because you wouldn't have had any other experience like this. So there was nothing to prepare you for what you were about to see. Did you have any support team around you?
I didn't. And I think that, you know, common with a lot of print journalists, they don't typically have as many people with them. They might have a fixer, which is
I've always wanted a fixer for anything, actually.
A journalistic term that I'm now across, which is basically a person that helps you out with stuff, like accommodation, language, et cetera. Photography, if you have one, you know, I didn't have a snapper with me. I was taking my own photos, which is why they're so bad in all my stories. Apologies. A lot of people, depending on the crew, will have a lot of PPE. I didn't really have PPE, because my kind of view was if I stayed out of particularly hot zones, I'd be relatively okay. And if I was unlucky enough on a missile strike, then I didn't think a bulletproof vest was probably going to save me. But, you know, the news crews tend to have the most sort of kit and people around them because they've got camera crews and heavy security, et cetera. But overall, it depended on the style of the journalist and the style of the outlet that they were reporting for. As I said, print people tended to have fewer, bells and whistles, and put in those terms. But, you know, at the beginning, I was hanging out where all the journalists were in Kyiv, and that helped me get my sort of feet on the ground and understand what was happening, what risks to take, what not to take. And some people were very generous to me in providing advice and help. So that was much appreciated.
So did you feel like people, other journalists there was a camaraderie and a sense that they're all kind of helping each other?
Absolutely. So, yeah, there's a sense of real camaraderie, a sense of unity, of purpose. Now, clearly, journalists are competitive.
Yeah. I was going to say, how does it change when you're in a war zone, everyone actually pulls together?
Well, look, certain things, if you're reporting straight news, explosion is explosion, right? And everyone wants to get the images and they all tend to go to the same places. Colour pieces or reportage like myself, it's easier to perhaps, there's so many options, there's so many things happening that I think you're not in so much competition, right? Okay, if you're going after an interview with Zelensky, then that may be more competitive, though he obviously has done a number of outlets. But overall, ton of help, support, solidarity, particularly in those early days when it was very unclear what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. The war was extremely fluid. So a lot of people helping one another. And certainly if you needed something or you needed help, leaving the city and that type of thing, tons of support there. And overall, generally, people swapped notes and were very friendly and helpful in terms of what do you think about this and how do you think it's going to play out news-wise, et cetera. So, look, they are a competitive bunch, journos, but overall, I'd say, everyone knew that they were there to do good work and there was a lot of support for that, yeah.
Now, just thinking about the amount of time you were there for, about over a month?
No, it was like about 50 days.
50 days, yeah. Okay. During that time, obviously, so much would have happened and you've had only a short amount of time to be able to process that personally. But is there a time or a moment of that 50 days that you remember really vividly or you look back on and it's kind of stayed with you for this whole time?
Yeah, look, I mean, you can sort of, I always like try not to valorize the experience too much. So there are other stories of like,
Let me do it for you.
I drove past live explosions and live shelling and, I saw live fire and, unfortunately saw people getting injured, et cetera. And, nearby missile strikes that were very close. But, that kind of drama is obviously, people like to hear those stories over a beer. But, the thing that always stays with me particularly is just the real quiet dignity and help that Ukraine has provided to foreigners like myself. My family's Russian-Ukrainian, but, I'm an Australian journalist, and in the hotels they continue to look after us. But, when I was in Lviv, the city was groaning under the weight of, all these many millions of people desperately trying to get away from Russian military aggression, and accommodation was really tight. And, I won't use their names because I, prefer not to, because it's always a bit tricky with the members of the public. But I got taken in by an old couple who were friends of friends, and I literally stayed in their spare room. It was like stepping out of a time capsule straight into my grandparents' home. Wow. So I was just like, man, I could really see where our family came from. And, they were so lovely to me and they fed me, looked after me. And like, these are, relatively poor people that were being attacked and they're looking after me. And then, that beautiful sense of unity and help to people. And that was a sort of spirit of the place. And, telling me stories about the Soviet Union. It was just, that kind of friendliness that I experienced was really touching, and that's what stays with me. And that's why, I say it all the time, to spend, a day, a week, a month, 50-odd days in Ukraine is to fall in love for a lifetime, and it's a place that I'll never forget.
Mm. Now, for people that are just considering a career in journalism or as a war correspondent, you've had this snapshot of time, a kind of trial by fire, just to actually learn what the profession is. But if you were a young person looking to get into the field, what kind of advice would you have for them, if someone wants to be a war correspondent or work in conflict zones, for example? What should they know and what should they prepare for before they go into it?
Well, I think firstly, I should, I demur to, qualified journalists, unlike pretend journalists such as myself. But nevertheless, clearly it's a field with a lot of training. The big shops like the ABC or, big networks, have people that get sent overseas as foreign correspondents, but they provide a lot of war zone training, et cetera. If you're a bit more like myself, I think, important from where I sat was being, able to connect with other people that have had similar experiences, being confident that you've got a contribution you can make. So I've been building up my expertise in foreign policy over a number of years. A lot of people ask me about writing, for example. One thing I'd say is, people say to me, I'd like to write. And so, well, what have you written? They say nothing. So let's start there, right? So, practice, look at those that you admire, learn from them. I've got a lot of journalists that I try to take, pointers from, and, people that, someone like Peter Hart, who I think is one of the best reporters internationally in terms of the way he's able to communicate complex ideas to the audience in ways that are very interesting. And I think, you look at those kind of people, you reach out to them, but, keep practicing. Craft is really about doing. And so before I arrived as a war correspondent, become a war correspondent, just go to somewhere where there's going to be a land war for the first time in 70 years and you can become one, right? But, you know, I felt I had done a lot of writing up until then. And so it's that practice that whatever it is you want to do, I think is the most helpful.
Misha, thank you so much for sharing your insights, really valuable tips and tricks and also experience lessons there for people. Thank you so much for joining 15 Minutes in DC.
Big pleasure. Thank you for having me.